The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Frank Urban from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading from Smithsonian, a magazine of the Smithsonian Institution. Today's programming is underwritten with the generous support of Carl and Pat Kappen. Thank them for their support. And I'm going to read Inside Naples' World-Famous Pizza Culture. For hundreds of years, artisans in the southern Italian city have been cooking up the ultimate fast food by Franz Lids. During those first few weeks of the COVID-19 outbreak, the Rome newspaper Il Foggio ran a panicky headline that proclaimed La morte del bacio, the death of kissing. In the age of social distancing, Italians wondered if smooching would soon go the way of the Roman Empire. 140 miles down the coast in Naples, where restaurants were twice shut down in lengthy lockdowns, natives mulled a more existential threat, la morte della pizza. Would the virus be the Neapolitan pie's kiss of death? Faced with a financial meltdown of Pompeian proportions, the pizzerias of Naples tweaked their centuries-old business models to fit the moment, ushering in such previously blasphemous practices as home delivery and, heaven forbid, pizza kits. Eating pizza is not a Naples norm that will be upended by the pandemic, maintains Luca Del Fra, an official with Italy's cultural ministry. Pizzas is economical. It's fast. It's Naples. So I doubt the public will forget. Naples is the birthplace, and as any Neapolitan will tell you, the spiritual homeland of pizza. In this southern Italian city of 963,000 people and 8,200 pizzerias, it is said that fathers want their sons to be one of two things, soccer players for the SSC Napoli, or pizza chefs, called pizzaiolia, or, in the local dialect, pizzaiolia. Yeah. There are 15,000 pizzaiolia in Naples, and the virtuosos are like pop stars, admired, even revered, with fervent followers who seldom stop arguing about their favorite place in the pizzaiolo pantheon. All Neapolitan pizza makers think they are the best in the city, even if all their relatives are Neapolitan pizza makers too, says Francesco Salvo, whose grandfather and two brothers are pizza chefs too. In the belly of old Naples squats Antica Pizzeria Portalba, the world's oldest pizza parlor. Portalba was established in 1738 as an open-air stand for peddlers who got their pies from the city's bakeries and kept them warm in small tinned copper stoves balanced on their heads. The stand expanded to a restaurant with chairs and tables in 1830, replacing many of the street vendors. 12 years later, Ferdinand II of the Two Sicilies, otherwise known as King Nascione, Big Nose, came incognito to the pizzeria to survey the mood of his people. The king probably ordered aolio el pomodoro, says Gennaro Luciano, the current proprietor. That's the pizzas topped with tomato sauce, oil, oregano, and garlic. That's commonly called marinara, derived from la marinara, the fisherman's wife, who typically prepared the dish for her husband when he returned from trawling in the Bay of Naples. Luciano is a sixth-generation pizzaiolo who, with shambling charm and a studious the unkept style. Neapolitan pizza making is not acrobatic, he says flatly. No flipping, no juggling, no jing, just the art of lavorazione, the way dough is worked. That art informs every aspect of Luciano's technique. From kneading and flattening, he says the dough has been amakata, crushed, to the blister and puff of a pie's cornicione. He's explaining this between bites of pizza, a portofoglio, literally a wallet pizza, that has been folded in half and then quarters. Since the tomato sauce has been gathered and protected in the folds, Luciano recommends holding the pie out away from your shirt front. Portalba claims to have invented this portable street food for nearly three centuries, has stocked the 8-inch mini pies in a display case by the entrance. Without the glass case, Pizza Portalba would no longer be the Pizza Portalba, says Luciano. Customers stopped in to buy portofoglio, and when they were students, now they return with their grandchildren. Luciano is 59 and has been making pizzas for the last 46 of those years. He's packed with an endless supply of pizza lore, which he retails more or less nonstop for hours, pausing only to stroke the fire in the back of Portalba's lava-lined oven with kindling and small chunks of oak. He says that not far from his pizzeria in the Greco-Roman ruins beneath the 18th-century cloister of San Lorenzo Maggiore are the remains of a 1st-century AD Roman market, a shopping arcade, and a proto-Neapolitan pizza oven. Similar baking chambers with hollow spaces to insulate hot air, drafts for smoke, and terracotta tile floors were found during excavations in nearby Pompeii and Herculaneum. Inside, some were loaves of bread preserved in charcoal, covered in ash and stamped to identify the baker. One 2,000-year-old loaf was divided into 8 wedges and inscribed Celer, C-E-L-E-R, slave of Quintus Granius Fursus. The story of pizza, says Luciano, dates to the Neolithic times when tribes baked a crude batter on the stones of their campfires. The Neapolitan variant was the product of two cultures, Greek and Etruscan. The Greek city-states feasted on plakas, a flat and round cheese pie with a rim of crust that served as a kind of handle. From the 8th century to the 5th century B.C., the Greeks colonized the coastal areas of southern Italy that made up Magna Graecia, bringing their edible plates along. It has been speculated that pita, the English word for a flat, hollow, unleavened bread, had etymological roots in picti, the ancient Greek term for fermented pastry, which in turn passed to Latin as piccata, hence pizza. At about the same time, says Luciano, the Etruscans left Asia Minor and settled in the northern and central parts of Italy. Their pizza dough precursor was a sort of grain mush baked in the stones beneath cooking ashes and topped with herbs and seasoned oils. After swallowing Etruscan folkways whole, the Romans renamed the ash cakes Panis Focaius, fireplace flour bread, which evolved into focaccia. Luciano grabs a tomato from a ceramic bowl, holds it aloft, and sinks his teeth into the fleshy pulp. This changed the face of flatbread, he says. The tomato gave Neapolitans the right to claim pizza as our own. In the early 16th century, Spanish conquistadors returned from the New World with an exotic yellow cherry-sized fruit that the Aztecs called the tomatl. Fear and loathing were quick to follow. In 1544, the Italian botanist and physician Pietro Mattola was the first to formally classify the plant, liking it to a cross between a mandrake and deadly nightshade, both poisonous. Soon the tomato was charred with the Latin name Lycopersicum, literally wolf peach. Wolf because of its alleged toxicity, peach due to its shape and texture. Word spread that wealthy people got sick and died after consuming tomatoes, and for some 200 years, most Europeans avoided them like the plague, which incidentally nearly eradicated the population of Naples during the mid-1600s. As it turns out, says Luciano, it was all a big misunderstanding. The wealthy ate their food off pewter, an alloy with a high lead content. Combined with tomatoes' acidity, the flatware would leach lead, sometimes resulting in the diner's death. The poor, on the other hand, used plates made of wood. They could eat tomatoes and not get sick, he says. It wasn't until the invention of pizza, somewhere in the early 1700s, that tomatoes began to gain wider acceptance. Pizza took a little longer, though it nourished the poor of Naples, who substituted tomato sauce for meat. The piquant dish wasn't to everyone's liking. Samuel Morse, inventor of the telegraph, described pizza, which he sampled on a visit in 1831, not unlike a piece of bread that had been taken reeking out of the skewer. The 19th century slight elicits a laugh from Luciano. Oven logs crackle continuously in a low, ominous mutter as he pads through the age-softened gallery, occasionally lifting up the crusts of pies to check that they are properly cooked, elastic but not limp, and not burned like toast. The magical breakthrough of pizza came in 1889, he says. That is when Queen Margherita of Savoy, consort of King Umberto I, observed peasants in Naples enjoying the people's food. Supposedly, the queen summoned the city's most famous pizzaiolo, Rafael Esposito, to the royal residence of Capodimonte Hill and had him prepare three pizzas for her. This was 28 years after the unification of Italy, and the pie she liked best bore the colors of the new national flag, tomato red, mozzarella white, and basil green. So pleased was Her Highness that she sent Esposito a letter of thanks. So flattered was Esposito that he named this tricolor sensation the Margherita. The patron saint of Neapolitan pies is Sophia Loren, who grew up just outside the city. Her canonization was propelled by the 1954 movie The Gold of Naples, in which she played a seller of pizza fritta, deep-fried half-moon pockets stuffed with ricotta, and crispy bits of fatty pork. Though Neapolitan pizza-making is dominated by men, the wives of pizzaioli played a key role after World War II, hawking fried pizza, the original pie, born before the oven-baked variety, to the poor. Standing before an oven was an arduous task, so making traditional pies was a man's job, explains Isabella de Cham, Naples' most renowned female pizzaiola. Instead of costly mozzarella, fried pizza used common ingredients and was smaller in size, which made it easier for feminine hands to fold. Storefront operation is tucked behind the 14th century Duomo in the working-class Forcella neighborhood. The peppery scent of basil and the aroma of warm dough precede the place, a pair of dining rooms watched over by a statue of St. Antonio Abate, the patron saint of bakers, enshrine the neon-lit glass cabinet. De Michele is the most determinedly traditional of all Naples pizzerias. Paterfamilias Salvatore Conduro got his license to make pizza in 1870. He prepared and sold fried pizza on the street outside his home since 1930, when his son Michele opened the family's first pizza emporium. The Conduros have been turning out Marianas and Margaritas and nothing else. The waiters, whose white polo shirts bear the phrase Il Tempio della Pizza, the Temple of Pizza, dismiss all other forms as papacioti, Neapolitan slang for phony tricks. 36 years ago, Associazione Verve Pizza Napoletana, AVPN, established by the city's 17 most prominent pizza-making families, set up a protocol to promote and protect the reputation of true Neapolitan pizza. According to any pizzeria that wants to display the association's logo, and in Naples, only 125, less than 2%, have made the grade, must make it Marianas and Margaritas, the only official civic pizzas from hand-kneaded dough, no rolling pins, that should be cajoled into a disc not to exceed 13.8 inches across and baked in a wood-fired brick oven. Cornicione must not rise above 4/5 of an inch. I'd like to be the taste tester there. For all their pizza purism, De Michele's pizzaioli seem to revel in flouting conventions. Rather than extra virgin olive oil, they use cheaper vegetable oil. Say it ain't so. Instead of mozzarella made from the milk of water buffaloes, they use a cow's milk alternative, which they insist maintains its soft consistency better in the intense heat, dry heat of the ovens. De Michele's amoeba-like pies overflow the plate, and you're not sure whether to eat them or keep them as pets. The Dalai Lama walks into a pizza shop and says, "Can you make me one with everything?" Of all the chefs dreaming up ethereal Neapolitan pizzas, none is as learned as Enzo Coccia. His pie-making academy in Naples' affluent Vomero district lures pilgrims from great distances, all seeking red sauce enlightenment. Coccia disciple Daniel Uditi of Pisana in Los Angeles says no other chef is so analytical. Enzo thinks about pizza from an intellectual perspective. He changed the way modern pies are made and brought respectability to the craft. Quiet and professional, Coccia, who's 58, has dabbled in chemistry, anthropology, and physics to better understand what he calls the delicate dance of assembling a proper Neapolitan pizza. "I can see a pizza from across a room and diagnose what's wrong with it," says Coccia in La Pizza Napoletana, the handbook he co-wrote in 2015, bubbles over with sprightly entries such as, "The quantity of heat transferred from the floor to the oven to the pizza is given in the equation QCOND equals KA parentheses TB dash TIMP parentheses. Coccia began working at his family's trattoria near the Napoli Central train station at the age of 8, and he now runs the school and two pizzerias, most notably La Nazia in he launched in the city's new pizza movement in 1994, becoming the first pizzaiolo to experiment with dough using a variety of flours and lengthy proving times. Among the surprising flavor combinations on his more avant-garde pies, eggplants and mint burrata, broad beans and asparagus, and lemon, licorice, and zucchini pesto. Pepperoni, an American invention, is a Naples no-no. Yet, he cautions, a pizzaiolo should not combine more top-of-the-line garnishes than is absolutely necessary. A terrible pizza chef who uses excellent raw materials will produce terrible pizzas, and an excellent pizza chef who uses terrible raw materials will also produce terrible pizzas. Nothing is more crucial than the quality of the ingredients. Except maybe the baking chamber. Gochia notes that Neapolitan pizza ovens have unique thermal properties, incorporating three means of heat transfer: conduction, convection, and radiation. The brick floor cooks the pie by direct contact or conduction. The curved interior circulates hot air throughout the chamber, convection, and heat absorbed into the masonry radiates from the dome. Radiant heat is what actually cooks the pizza, and because the heat waves come from so many angles, the temperature of the cooking surface isn't uniform. Every oven has hot spots, Cochi allows. The pizzaiolo must be familiar enough with an oven's quirks to eye a pie and know where to move it next. With a single pizza, no problem. But when four or five bake at once, anyone less than a master is likely to cremate them all. Like many restaurants in Italy, the pizzerias of Naples were hit hard by the pandemic. Many parlors survived the three-month spring lockdown on the back of Cassa Integrazione, a government program that covers up 80% of employees' wages for companies that apply and are accepted into the relief scheme. The plight of the pizzerias was also partly alleviated by a Heal Italy decree that suspended loan and mortgage repayments for companies and families, thanks to state guarantees for banks and increased funds to help firms pay laid-off workers. Cochia reports that during the first COVID-19 wave, the money brought in by carryout, pizzas were prohibited, deliveries were prohibited, wasn't even enough to cover his staff's salaries, let alone his overhead costs. He estimates that his business was down some 75%. The outlook got rosier over the summer, but on October 25, after coronavirus deaths in Italy had tripled in a month, the state imposed a strict curfew. Restaurants were forced to close at 6 p.m. and could offer only takeout. The pizzas that Cochi concocted for home delivery during the pandemic second wave require lower oven temperatures and longer cooking times, making for a slightly drier pie. We will continue with home deliveries and takeaway, he says, but always giving the priority to the customers at the table. I asked Cochia to name a Neapolitan pizzaiolo at the pinnacle of his profession. Attilio Bacchetti, he says, without hesitation. He makes the lightest, most digestible pizza there is. Bacchetti, who shapes the pies at Pizzeria d'Attilio, is smiling but aesthetic, a lovable obsessive whose devotion to pizza is complete. The son of a pizzaiolo himself and the son of a pizzaiolo, he began his apprenticeship at age 6. He's now 56. D'Attilio is an unpretentious gastronomic shrine smack in the middle of the lively Pignasecca market. You're greeted at the door by Maria Francesca Marinello, daughter-in-law of Attilio Bacchetti, who opened the joint in 1938, and mother of Attilio Bacchetti, who presides over it now. The walls are blanketed in press clippings, celebrity photos, and framed napkin doodles, many of which picture the chef molding his precise, studied creations. Bacchetti says the secret to D'Attilio's airy crust is little yeast, lots of thyme. His signature, thyme as in T-I-M-E, not the herb, His signature dish is Carnevale, a Baroque fantasy of tomato sausage and flour of milk. Mozzarella that sports an eight-pointed crust folded around sweet ricotta. His other showstoppers, Pizza Giardino Raya, also 8 points packed with grilled mushrooms and sautéed vegetables. Pizza Cosacca, marinara, marinara margheta hybrid, mozzarella out, grated cheese in, and bacchetta, little kisses, spiral rolls of dough bursting with ricotta and provola, and perfumed with nutmeg and black pepper. The precision of Bacchetti's hand movements is something to behold. He'll grab a ball of dough, bloated from a two-day prove, and slap it onto a slightly floured marble countertop, pressing his fingertips gently from the center of the bloat toward the edges. He gingerly massages, punches, stretches, and turns it back on itself. He spreads a few tablespoons of tomato sauce over the dough, crowns it with cheese and herbs, drizzled and olive oil, and pulls the edges of the crust taut over the small round palate of paligno, a long-handled stainless steel turning peel. Then he slides the impasto into the growing mouth of the oven, glowing mouth of the oven, I should say, and gently rotates the pie while it cooks. After a minute, he centers the paligno under the crust and lifts it slightly to give the underside a final char, a technique known as doming. On the journey between plate and mouth, the bouncing strings of molten cheese seem to be alive. They're not, of course, though technically the crust was before it was browned. Before I arrived in Naples, Katie Parla, author of Food of the Southern South, warned me, once you've been to Pepe and Grani, you'll never be able to eat pizza anywhere else again. For 3 years running, Pepe and Grani, the showplace of Pizzaioli Franco Pepe, has been voted Italy's finest pizzeria in the top 50, a prestigious list judged by Italian culinary heavyweights. Los Angeles chef Nancy Silverton, whose Pizzeria Moza is North America's preeminent sourdough establishment, likens Pepe's pies to perfectly roasted marshmallows. The perfect marshmallow is not one that goes right into the flame and chars, she says. It takes practice to be near a flame and get that beautiful caramelization. Franco has achieved perfection through his mastery of pizza making. It feels almost like he invented pizza. Well, I hope you've enjoyed today's reading from Smithsonian. How many of you have ordered a pizza listening to this story? Be sure to listen next time. I'm Frank Urban, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's programming is underwritten with the generous support of Carl and Pat Keppen. We thank them for their continued support. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. So long until next time. Address any comments or questions to us at 919-832-5138.